I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Must Have Seen TV listeners. This is your host, Brett White, and I just wanted to hop on before the episode started this week and go through a few bits of business with all of you. If you're not already, you can go on and follow the podcast on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr at Must Have Seen TV. And you can also rate and review the episode in iTunes, which really, really helps this show out to find new listeners and do all the other magical things that iTunes does behind the curtains that we don't talk about, we don't look at. We don't question iTunes. And make sure you listen all the way through to the end of the episode for a clue as to what show we're watching next week. And it's more than a clue, it's actually me saying the name of the episode that we are watching next week. Enjoy this week's episode. Attention Stargate Defenders, it's time for Must Have Seen TV, the podcast dedicated to the sitcoms of the 20th century, from I Love Lucy to, appropriately, News Radio. I'm your TV guide, Brett White, and this week I'm joined by Curtis Rutherford. Hello, Curtis.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going good. You excited to be in my haven, my office?
As always, yeah, yeah. Surrounded by a million different action figures and everything.
I've started a sitcom corner.
In my
office. Every time, because I'm trying to be like, every time I finish watching a complete series, I kind of want to buy a memento from it, which is why I have a Bob Newhart 8x10, and then my husband got me a signed Moose as Eddie, Frazier 8x10.
Yeah, that's really good.
Just signed with his little paw print.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So like right now I'm working my way through News Radio, which is appropriate because that's what we're talking about today. So I'm trying to think of like what News Radio thing am I going to get when I finish it.
You could get the weird trapezoid table that they all sit around.
it's a weird, it's like a bowling lane, like pylons. It's like a weird.
But they did this weird forced perspective thing to make everybody sit so that you could see them all in the shot.
They're like cheating out or
whatever. Yes, exactly. But then
it's
rather
the cheat out table.
It's so weird, yes. And I don't think I realized the first, when I originally watched it, how weird it is. But then I think knowing it, and this episode,
yeah,
I think it's in the second season where they get it, maybe?
Yeah.
I forget.
Because it changes a couple times because one of the, right, Paul Sands or someone might have, it's like, I have the table. I have one of the conference room tables. So this week on the show, we are traveling to October 23rd, 1996. The movie Sleepers ruled the box office. Macarena by Los Del Rio topped the charts. So compare and contrast that. And News Radio aired Arcade. Curtis, you must have seen Arcade before.
Yes.
Yeah.
Several times. Yeah, yeah.
Because when I announced I was going to do this podcast, News Radio was, I guess it kind of shows you the type of circles I run in.
Yes.
And that News Radio was the one that multiple people were like, I got to talk about News Radio. Which I feel like in other social circles, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
It's very specific. I have a lot of like white comedy writers, male comedy writers in their early to mid 30s. That's.
And it very much, like, News Radio, both because it was a sitcom, it was like an NBC sitcom at the height of that NBC sitcom era. It was the kind of the other one. It was like
it was the
Kinks of, like, the Beatles, Rolling Stones era of, like, this is the one we're going to get into.
Yeah.
And also, it just has that, for me, it was like, oh, I loved Phil Hartman from SNL. I loved Dave Foley from Kids in the Hall.
Yeah.
And all these, like, stand-ups that I knew, like Andy Dick and Joe Rogan, like that. So it just, like, when it came on, it hit a lot of overlapping circles for what I love.
So did you watch it, like, episode one, or, like, early, like, season one, season two, early
I'm pretty sure episode one.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
I remember getting very into it very quickly.
So you were there for the hype. Like, that mid-season hype got you.
And then, like, I do remember following it around. Like, I think it was that and Sports Night that I remember being very aware of how much networks were fucking them over.
So, like, when people say to me, I don't know anything about news radio, can you just tell me something about it? My shorthand way of explaining to them is, like, there is a subcategory on their Wikipedia page that is just titled Relationship with Network.
Yeah.
Like, that alone tells you that it's a weird show that had a very, very weird relationship with NBC, which I feel like is one of the most fun things about this show.
Yeah.
Is all the behind the scenes stuff. I also came to this show live when it aired. I remember, I feel like I probably started watching it season two or three. I mean, I was hyper aware of NBC at that time because I remember watching Friends debut and ER, like those changed the way I viewed television. And so, you know, a year later when News Radio debuted, like, mid-season, I definitely probably was aware of it. And I do remember it was one of the shows my parents did not watch. Like, I watched Friends and Seinfeld and ER and stuff with my mom and dad. News Radio was a thing that I discovered on my own. So it has that same feeling as, like, Talk Soup and Mystery Science Theater 3000 and, like, all those specific shows that, you know, middle school me was like, oh, this is weird and funny.
I watched all of the NBC shows pretty regularly. Like,
Wings,
it was,
you get on that
I
Wings
watched
train.
Wings, Wings watch, like, on that and in syndication. And since we moved around a lot, often whatever was syndicated is what I saw especially a lot because what was on the Armed Forces Network in Germany? For some reason, the military decided, like, people would love Wings, they would love...
Yeah, Planes,
It was, like, whatever weird sitcom in addition to that.
I know, and News Radio, I feel like a lot of people discovered it, because when I was in college, it started being reran on A&E, and that's where a lot of my college friends discovered it for the first time. So it had, like, even though it only hit 97 or 98 episodes, so it didn't even hit, it's also beautiful, it's like it ran five seasons, but still didn't hit
that syndication 100 mark.
It's very News Radio.
Yeah.
So this week on Must Have Seen TV, we're talking about the News Radio episode Arcade. It's the fourth episode of season three. It was written by Brian Kelly and directed by Tom Sharones. Here's how iTunes describes the episode. Dave's old nemesis comes back to haunt him when Beth replaces the lobby sandwich machine with a popular 1980s arcade game. Lisa retakes her college entrance exams to see if her mind is slipping. Curtis, is that accurate?
I mean, that's an accurate... Yeah, yeah.
This is pretty much what it is.
Yeah.
This is... You suggested you wanted to do the Bill Eats Old Sandwiches episode.
Yeah.
And I was surprised to learn that the A-plot of that episode is the arcade game.
Yeah.
Which is one of the iconic News Radio episodes. I feel like both of those plots are pretty iconic News Radio plots.
And the reason I picked this one is, I feel News Radio is one of those shows where when you bring it up to somebody, they have their favorite episode that they can, like, right away, or they have their favorite, like, plot.
Yeah.
Not even episode-wise. And for some reason, this one jumped into my head because I remember my freshman year of college, I was talking about News Radio with a friend of mine who I had a huge crush on, and she instantly said, like, oh, the episode where Bill eats sandwiches. And we both, like, then described to each other excitedly
they
in that way.
They are gross sandwiches. They're green and dusty. And they also have an artificial crunch to them that's definitely added in Foley.
Definitely a Foley.
It's very, very fake sounding, too. So, like, the episode starts with all of them gathered around at that weird...
The weird
oddly
table.
Shaped conference table, and Dave pulling suggestions out of the Budget Cutter of the Month award, where they all make suggestions.
Which really feels like the A-plot initiation box.
Yeah.
It's like, it's such a perfect way of just kind of like...
A-plot this, B-plot this.
We've got this, exactly, yeah.
What's even, does even speak largely to the plot, the way the episode is structured... There is an A, B, and C, like, A is the arcade game, B is Lisa... Or is the A Lisa taking the SATs again?
I would say, like, B or C is Lisa.
And then C or is Belle eating the sandwich? Like, they're all three. And the fact that they are all initiated, two of them are initiated at the top with the Budget Cutter of the Month Award thing, because Beth's idea of, like, let's get rid of that sandwich machine kicks off Bill's plot, but they replace it with the arcade, which kicks off Dave's plot. And then Dave's plot dovetails with Lisa's plot because he gets too wound up playing the game and doesn't sleep and takes the SAT. Like, it's crazy.
It's very efficient plotting in terms of how those three stories connect very well. It doesn't feel like they were just, like, taped together, like, oh, we took this purple card with this A plot and this blue card with this B plot, and we just, like, hey, write this story.
Yeah.
And also, they all have this feeling of nostalgia. Like, they are all linked thematically.
Yeah,
this, like,
wow, yeah, they totally are. Oh, God.
What was my childhood? Yeah.
Because you really get a... Wow, you really do learn about all three of their childhoods, because you learn that, like, Dave was a pale... Like, as Beth says, like, a pale...
Were you one of those guys in high school who spent every day at the arcade hunched over the controls of a simulated spaceship with all the other pale, friendless virgins?
You learn that Lisa was a high-strung, perfect achieving high school student that also smoked to, like, relieve her stress. And then Bill had an abusive mother who made him a mentally or maybe physically abusive mother who made him sandwiches once a month and then just left them out.
Which they, like, those backstories are things that they, like, hinted at. Like, Dave's backstory, they definitely, like, from episode one, it's clear, like, oh, you were this sad nerd. And this is, like, New York is your salvation a little bit.
Yeah, I like the... It's weird that Beth even has to ask, wait, were you one of those kids? Like, isn't it obvious? Look at him.
Yeah.
That's also kind of the weird running joke they have, is Dave is always, throughout the course of the show, revealing new embarrassing. Mm-hmm. Like, he tap dances, he also is, like, a knife thrower, and every time he does it, everyone is like, what?
Yeah.
But it's like, no, come on, look at it.
You guys have been friends with him for 4 years now.
But I also feel like another one of the running jokes on news radio is none of them know Joe's last name, and every single time anyone says Joe Garelli, they're like, your last name's Garelli?
Yeah.
It happens across at least three seasons with almost every cast member doing it at some point.
It also, that feels like one of those, like, Paul Simms style jokes where the network probably didn't give a shit about it. Like, Andy falling down.
I gotta talk about that.
And they would keep putting it in just because they loved it. Like, the same way that Beth says love happened in this episode of, like, they're doing the jumble and it's like, and the answer is...
Detain. And how did the mixed doubles team fare in the big match? Answer... They fell in love.
And there's no reason for it. It's just this weird character thing.
One of the things is in that relationship with NBC, with network section of Wikipedia, it talks about how for halfway through season two, through all of season three, the cold opens almost always end with Matthew falling down, tripping, getting hit. Stupid physical comedy. And most of the time it's funny because... If you know they're doing it on purpose to make the network angry, it becomes even funnier because you'll notice, oh, it's happening out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Like, the buttons already happened, and then Matthew will walk in and just trip on something.
Yes. Yeah.
This one doesn't have that.
It doesn't.
It doesn't. Yeah. The cold open ends with Bill, like, holding a new sandwich or whatever coming, and then the cold open button is a crunch.
Yeah.
Him biting into the sandwich for the first time, and you realize, oh, they're gross.
Yeah.
So that's the cold open is them getting rid of all the stuff. There's a really funny business I'd never noticed until this time where Catherine or someone says, why don't we get rid of those boxes?
No one uses
them. What about my idea to stop buying all those boxes of paper clips? No one really uses them.
No, I do.
Yeah, dude, but making necklaces and bracelets doesn't count.
And then Andy Dick does these really, like, he, like, tugs at his shirt sleeve and then also, like, pulls the collar up around his neck more. So he can hide his paperclip jewelry.
Which we don't actually see. No. But they do that kind of, like, little bit of the type of move that we see a lot more now in single cam sitcoms.
Yeah.
Because, oh, you can take it. You can do that, like, Modern Family style. Oh, you know what? Whatever. A person laying on the hammock and they're...
Yeah. Like, if this was a single cam show, the camera would have done, like, it would have been, like, from a different, more discreet angle and would have been, like, a zoom in on, like, him, like, fidgeting. Which the fact that I've seen this episode maybe a dozen times, this is the first time I really noticed that joke.
Yeah.
Is crazy.
Yeah.
It's just rewarding. Do you think that was a joke that they scripted in, or that was like an Andy Dick on set?
I don't know, because a lot of it they did, they would readjust with the audience of like, what would they write? And especially Dave Foley would keep pitching jokes as they went. But the fact that they like did a they did a close up, and so much of news radio is like wides or two shots.
Yeah.
That they close up on Andy to do that little business.
It's so good. So the act one opens up with Lisa working at doing the jumble with Matthew. This is basically Matthew's only scene in the entire episode, I noticed. Yeah. Like Catherine is always shortchanged. Yes. Which is
she has nothing to do in this episode, and it's like the typical, they had no idea what to do with Candy Alexander.
And it's so frustrating. Because also, like, well, Joe Rogan doesn't have that much to do in this episode, and at least Matthew gets a scene. And that jumble is like Lisa's working on the jumble, and Matthew is doing his, like, way to figure out.
Ned.
There's no O in that one.
I know. It's all part of the process.
And then, yeah, they start to slowly figure it out. And this also becomes another running theme of Beth figuring out the jumble right away. So many of the reveals of characters are throughout the episode, or throughout the series are, oh, this character is a savant at blank.
Right, yeah.
And this is like Beth just can like unjumble all these things instantly.
And I love her like way of thinking, is like, well, one letter just speaks to me.
You just look at the letters, right? And then one of them goes, pick me at first. And then the others are like, I'm second and my friend Mr. E here is third. I'd really rather not reveal the intricacies of my process at this point.
And that happens a lot with a bunch of characters. Like, there's, like, these weird things where it's, like, one of the few episodes they gave to Catherine was, she's very good at three-card Monty.
Yeah.
Which is also kind of like, guys, come on. It's better than that.
Yeah, it's a little something.
A little something. More than a little stereotype.
Beth, Vicki Lewis is such a fascinating character. And Beth, like, that performance and everything is so, I love it so much. I love her so much. I don't understand how she was never nominated. Well, I understand how she was never nominated for an Emmy, because this show was habitually overlooked.
And also a year after, I think, is when Desperately Susan started, with the same character played by...
Suddenly Susan played her quirky sit, and there was this weird rivalry because they started noticing. We can talk about Beth's outfit, like, because that's one of the main things that apparently they started custom making Vicki Lewis's wardrobe in season 4 because they would notice that they were literally stealing the exact outfit Beth was wearing, and Kathy Griffin would be wearing it a couple weeks later on a Suddenly Susan episode. That's insane.
Yeah.
I want to actually figure that out. Like, I don't think Suddenly Susan exists anymore. I don't know where it is.
Yeah. But that would be great to.
I want to do side by sides.
Yes.
In this opening scene, Beth is wearing a, like, white baby doll tee, a leather, like, biker jacket with no sleeves, a sleeveless brown leather, and then, like, a floor length leopard print tight skirt, and probably like a belly chain.
Yes. And later on, she's wearing this thing, which I don't even have the words to describe it. It basically is like, almost like it covers her shoulders, so it's like a shawl, except it also is like a halter top that only connects in front and leaves her, like, from sternum to belly button exposed, and then a long skirt.
Yeah, it, like, sweeps to the... It's like a, like, sexy Stevie Nicks kind of thing. I love... She... As a performer, and it happens a lot in this scene with, like, what you said earlier, the way that she just says words and the way the attention to detail she pays to physical I mean, she's a Broadway person. Yes. They apparently discovered her because she was in Damn Yankees, and they were like, oh, her. And there's such a theatricality conjures up overacting.
Yeah.
It's not that. She has very deliberate and graceful and weird movements. There's a scene later on after Dave has been tempted by the arcade machine and is resisting to go in. Beth just walks into his office with holding two hands out with quarters, and she doesn't just walk straight to the desk and plop them down. She, like, does a weird, like...
As if she were wafting meat in front of a hungry dog.
In front of his face, and then she, like, goes and just, like, drops them on his desk slowly. There's so much stuff like that with her, with the way she walks and jumps. There's a bit of business in the act one while Lisa's trying to work the jumble and can't figure it out. In the background, her and Matthew are just, like, doing weird hand motion. Like,
yes. They were doing like this like kid style, like, oh, can you roll your tongue? Can you pat your head and rub your tummy?
And their interaction right there, the way that she just jumps up and down a lot.
Yeah.
It's such a, like, that's how real people move.
So I want to break that apart into two pieces, because there's two big things. Like, one is that physicality you see in almost all of them, which is why I was, like, this watch I was really looking at, oh, yeah, they keep to medium shots and wides.
Yeah, they do, yeah.
Almost entirely. Yeah. And there's a shot earlier on, before the quarters thing, when she displays the Galaxy Defender? What was
Stargate
it?
Defender.
Stargate
yeah.
Defender, not Galaxy.
No, not Galaga, no.
where she shows that, where Dave just pulls up against the wall a little bit, and she, like, leans into the machine as if she's, like, leaning against it. Like, it's a, you know, powerful Sultan or something like that.
Yeah, she does so much weird, because, like, right there, like, she's not just leaning on it, like, isn't she doing, like, a kind of, like, a full body, like, tilt kind of thing? And it's all, like, weird subtle shit. And the way that they, basically, they go up, they learn, like, Bill comes running through the office holding, like, the...
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, okay, there's so many shows. I need to unpack this to get into this. One of the things I think is key to news radio is the pacing is insane, to the point where earlier we couldn't really figure out what the A, B, and C plot is, and that is because the way news radio is written is those plots are fighting for attention.
Yes.
The characters themselves are very fast-paced and bickering and, like, always, you know, trying to, like, one-up each other, and on a meta level, the show is also doing that.
Yes.
Because we start off with that scene of Lisa and Matthew and Beth doing the jumble. She then goes into Dave's office. They have a longer talk about how she thinks she's getting, you know, dumber. Mm-hmm. And then Dave, like, offhandedly is like, you should take your SATs again. That scene is interrupted by Bill running in with the sandwiches to be like, they're taking it away. Then they all move out to the same. So that's, we've covered two plots. We go out there. The sandwich machine is then moved away to reveal Stargate Defender, mm-hmm. the third plot. And that's all ostensibly like one scene. It's one unbroken thing. And you're watching characters literally run in to be like, hey, it's my turn for the plot now. Come with me, bye.
Which brings up the other thing that, with that quarter thing especially, that became apparent, is how much the characters push each other into their plots.
Yeah.
Like, it's Beth, you know, putting the quarters. It's Dave saying, maybe you should take the SAT. Like, they're like, they're really shoving each other on each other's heels. So, like, make them do these things.
Well, it's even the reason that Dave even gets involved is because, like, he's like, well, I've taken the extension cord, so it's not working. And then Mr. James comes in and, like, grabs the extension cord, and Dave, like, has to kind of intervene and be like, are you sure, like, save the humanoids?
You got any tips for me?
Yes, save the humanoids.
Like, imagine if they're, you know, your parents or whatever. So, like, you see that is both of them pushing each other into doing other things. It's very fascinating.
That speed, it makes it very clear why they fired Ray Romano.
Oh, God,
right?
Like, because he was the original Joe.
Yes.
And then they fired him, like, after Dress. And so in the pilot, there is a fake Joe and also a fake Catherine who doesn't say anything.
Which is not that much more than they gave to Candy.
I downloaded the pilot script, and Catherine actually does have a lot of lines in it, at towards the end or whatever. But I don't know if they recorded them and then cut them once they realized they were recasting her. So I wonder if there's footage of Ella Joyce, the original Catherine, saying anything. There's also this great line when Beth comes in to, like, here, can you sign this?
Knock, here, can you sign this thing?
Sure. There. Hey, I didn't just sign for a stolen Jeep, did I, Radar?
Dave, I don't watch Star Trek.
This is also, it's so reference heavy.
Yeah.
Because in that one scene, they reference MASH. She responds with a Star Trek reference.
She's like, I don't watch Star Trek, which is such a great, like, second iteration, like, second laugh off that.
And then right after that, Dave and Lisa make a Flowers for Algernon reference. It's like, boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
It's very, very reference heavy. Again, like, closer to what, like, a single cam sitcom would do.
This goes to my whole thing of most of these single cam shows could be multicam shows if those writers and creators were interested in doing that format.
Yeah.
I feel like the reason the multicam structures and the multicam structure flounders in the year of our Lord 2017 is because all the people that want to make these shows are, you know, following, like, doing single cam.
Yeah.
Where, God, like, what I would not give to see a Michael Schur multicam show, like a Parks and Rec multi, yeah. like that would work. That's a whole other side tangent.
And it, it takes that much more work of than interacting with the audience, which they yeah. can do so much of continually rewriting as they win.
Which I think, I feel like that makes it so much, oh, I just love that. Yeah. But also, like, you can watch news radio, and when you really start thinking about what they're doing, you realize this was a hard show to make, I would imagine. Yeah. Because everything is so fast-paced and so interconnected. Mm-hmm. There's also, I wanted to point out that this episode is also really good at showing how Dave and Lisa can be funny.
Yeah.
Like, they are not... Another main problem I have a lot of modern sitcoms, multicam shows, is all of the punchlines are interchangeable. Everyone has the exact same level of witty. Everyone has the exact same point of view. They can all interchange. And News Radio is a show where, like, there aren't any jokesters.
Yeah.
There isn't a Chandler. Like, Dave might be the closest to, like, Dave makes purposeful, like, witty remarks.
Yes.
Lisa doesn't do that. Beth doesn't do that. Mm-hmm. But they're still funny in some way. And this is this episode is really good at showing how Lisa and Dave, the most straight person of the entire cast, are funny.
Yes.
Like, 'cause it really is getting at their insecurities.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why I love that Dave's offhanded, like, oh, of course, you should do this stock sitcom plot of going and retaking your SATs. Yeah. Isn't that preposterous? And Lisa's like, yes, I should.
So one of the things I just had to look up on my phone, which I realized. So when did this air?
This is a 1996.
Okay. There's an episode of The Simpsons called Lisa the Simpson, where Lisa Simpson fears that she's losing her intelligence because she can't figure out a number jumble on the back of a box. And so she also fears she's getting stupider and losing her perspicacity, and is one of the lines. So I was curious to see which one was first.
Oh, man. I also remembered that earlier scene ends with, like you said, there's a cereal box runner.
Because,
like, Dave is, like, looking at Stargate Defender, and Lisa then walks back in.
Yes.
She's holding
a bottle of a box of Quisp.
Yeah.
Whatever the fuck that is.
I love this stretch of scene starts with Lisa doing the jumble, cycles through all the other plots, and then comes back to Lisa. And then we get this really great, very, very classic news radio style of a character standing stationary and members of the rest of the cast, like, buzzing by them, lobbing off, like, jokes, where they're noticing the other things that are different in the side-by-side comparison.
Yeah, I can only find two.
Well, the dog's hat is tilted the other way.
Yes, well, duh.
And there are two frogs in this one.
Bet that. Cowboy's boots are bigger.
Balloons are missing.
Balloons hadn't been invented yet back in cowboy times.
Line by line, I think every line contained a joke.
Yeah.
Like, it is so dense.
Yeah. I wanted to bring up we have to talk about Mr. James.
Yeah.
Because I love Stephen Root so much. He's used very little in this episode. He's only used for, like, one scene. But his performance, even in this, is so good.
He's one of those, he and John Goodman, anytime you see them in anything, you're like, this is going to be good.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever the rest of this is going to be
Stephen
good.
Root, when he popped up in Get Out, I was like, of course he's in this.
Oh, great. Fantastic.
This is great.
And this has a great Jimmy James thing, which they do with Dave a lot, too, of the, you are both an adult and a child.
Oh, yeah.
Because it comes in, he's like, Dave, let me play.
Please, sir. No video
game
stream.
Come on, Dave. Let me play.
No.
Please, gotta play. Wanna play. Gotta play.
I wrote down Mr. James : baby.
Yeah. And he's, like, bleeding to get this extension cord from Dave so that he can play it. And then as soon as he gets it, and Dave is like, don't do it. Don't do it. He instantly just, like, turns into an adult. He does that It's Always Sunny thing where it's like, great, I played my game. Now I need to stop,
react
to you, and go, like, Dave, what's going on? Is everything okay? And he becomes the boss again.
He gets a really great moment when, after, like, end of night one, or just day one, at night of day one, that's a weird way to say that, Dave is leaving for the night, and he notices Mr. James is still at the machine pumping in quarters, and he's, like, having a mental breakdown. The way he is still wearing his full suit, except his tie is, like,
his
loosened.
His tie's undone. He's untucked his shirt.
He's untucked his shirt. And then he's pushed his suit, his jacket sleeves up.
Not his shirt sleeves. Not the shirt sleeves, yeah.
And he also just hasn't just taken off his jacket.
No, not at all. He didn't unbutton his shirt, even.
It's really weird.
It was just, yeah.
It's really weird. But then he starts blubbering about, like,
well, I'm humanoids getting beamed into outer space. My mom, my dad, my brother. There's nothing I can do, Dave. They're all gone.
Which is a great another example of him playing this, like, weird baby adult person.
Yes. The Bill's mother subplot, they keep hinting throughout the series of Bill's terrible upbringing. Like, there's an episode where Bill and Matthew, like, get into a fight where it finally goes too far, and Matthew, like, hits it. Or he hits Matthew, and Matthew hits him. And they, like, talk about Bill's upbringing, and it's just this constant, like, Ayn Randian style, like, survival of the fittest. He and his brother just mercilessly tearing each other apart, being raised almost like wolves in this you must please us. And this, the background in this one is when Bill brings up leaving boxes of sandwiches out for him on the front
porch. God, like, is he chained up out there? There's a really great line at some point. I guess this might also be right before the Jimmy Dave exchange. It's also crazy how so much of this all happens. It's all so much. There's an exchange between Bill and Catherine when Catherine's leaving for work, and Bill comes up with all the sandwiches and he's like wanting to ride down with her, and she says, like,
you take the stairs. I don't want to risk getting stuck between floors with those things.
Then we'd have nourishment.
I'd eat my arm off first.
That, to me, like, Catherine, that is how Catherine is funny.
Yes.
There is this, and I wish they used it more, and I wish she was in this episode more, but, like, that one line and the way she delivers it is, like, that's her. Like, that's what I love about her. She, like, closes her eyes a little bit. Like, she just gets so, like, searing angry. Just, like...
So they had three people that would be that, like, straight man or voice of reason to Bill. And it was mostly Dave. Lisa would do it sometimes. And then it would be Catherine. The problem is Dave had two sides of his character.
Yeah.
It was that It's Always Sunny thing where it's like he could be that voice of reason. But then he could also be Dave, the kind of, like,
super, like, nerdy goofy. Dude.
Lisa could be her, like, type A, overly, like, I'm trying so hard to show you I know so much more than everybody else here. And then she would respond to Bill and be able to shut him down. They only ever gave Catherine that one side.
Yeah. And there are hints of, the, like, what they could have done with her. Because there, which I guess they never picked up on, there's a weird prank aspect to her character that comes up a couple times. Especially in her last episode where she, like, tells Joe, like, come by my apartment, and you think that, oh, Joe and they're finally going to hook up. And then at her going away dinner, she's like, oh, nothing, I only wish I could see what's going on in my apartment right now. And then you cut to, and it's like Joe naked and Bill coming over, because she's done the same thing to both of them. And I mean, there's even that really great plot line, and maybe even season one, where she's, like, desperate to find out Bill's, is it his age or his middle name?
It's his age? Yeah.
Or his birthday, because he's saying her birthday on the air.
Yeah.
There's, like, that, like, make her... There was never an episode where, like, one of her, like, vendettas or pranks, or even the fact that she just slaps everyone all the time, like, goes too far.
Exactly.
Because then they're, oh, then that's a character. That's a thing you can do. Because she does have... That's a funny thing. Like, she's very classy and dignified. There's a really strong dignity and confidence to her character.
But she has that news anchor aspect. She holds herself like that. You know what to do in front of a microphone.
Right. And then to undercut that with also, like, she fucking suffers no fools and will, like, expose your dark secrets or prank you in, like, weird ways. Like, that's a fun thing they could have done. And the way that she, like, sells the stuff they give her when they give her, that is so good. And I wish they had.
Yeah.
Because I will say, like, I just finished rewatching season 4. The show does lose something when she leaves. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think that was true the first couple times I rewatched it, but this most recent time, having that third straight person in the show anchors it more.
Yeah.
Even if her only role is to be the straight person most of the time, having her there, having that extra body there, it helps fill it out. There's a weird hollowness to, like, the second half of season 4 when she's not there, which is weird considering how little they give her to do.
She and Dave are generally the only characters who pause before responding.
Yeah.
Everybody else on it is very much kind of like, Andy's going to do something physical, even if it's silent.
Yeah.
But like, in this episode, there's a great long pause where Beth asks Dave something, and he just like, oh, were you one of those pale virgins? I think it might have been that one. And he just doesn't respond for a good 8 seconds.
Yeah.
And just like messes with his suit a little bit and then says no.
I listened to the commentary before, and they also point that out, that thing about pauses. Basically, Bill's trump card to like get that sandwich machine back is Dave comes back after taking the SATs, and Bill's there with, like, a woodsman's hat on, like a floppy, like, ear hat, and, like, a coat. And he's like, well, I went through my rations, and, like, last night at 12:40-something, something strange started happening to my body. And he takes off his hat, and his hair is gray.
Yeah.
And Dave's immediate response is, you didn't, did you?
You actually dyed your hair gray to convince me to bring back the sandwich machine?
Yes, I did! Now do you understand how important this is to me?
Only if you dyed all your hair gray to match.
I did!
Which they said in the commentary was written in the script with a beat before it.
Yeah.
But they were like, when he did it, he just ignored that beat and just said it immediately, which was funnier. Just be like, they didn't even like live in the artifice of Bill was trying to pull one over on Dave. He's gonna be like, yes, I did. Well, the only way you would convince me is if you dyed all your hair gray. Yes, I did. Like, there was no break.
Because Bill's character is confident at all times.
Yeah.
And he never should take that beat up.
No.
Let me readjust. It's, oh, we both know what's happening here.
Yeah.
You know the depths and the lengths I will go for anything. I've shown it to you. That also is such a funny, very news radio style of they will go so far, but it's never fantasy. They will address at all times how insane it is. Like when Jimmy James runs for president, that's an insane plot.
Yeah.
And at every second, they're like, are you, this is crazy. You're running for president.
Yeah. Yeah, I love it so much. I wanted to bring up the hotness of this show. Okay, this is going to get into weird territory, maybe. No, but I've had a crush on Phil Hartman, like, this is middle school, obviously. Did you also have similar middle school, high school romantic leanings on who?
Maura Tierney.
Yeah, because I feel like this could be, it's like a Rorschach test or something. Yes. Like, what kind of man or what kind of person are you? Are you a Catherine, a Beth, or a Lisa?
Yeah. And absolutely, like, smart, confident brunette, like, 100%.
Loves NPR, loves watching C-SPAN.
Yes.
I love the episode where Dave finally convinced her to get a TV because they have C-SPAN.
Yeah.
And it's both of them watching, he's watching Green Acres in the store, and she's watching. I'm like, oh, that's so nice. But yeah, like, as a kid, I had such a huge crush on Phil Hartman. I remember going to see, like, House Guest and, Jingle All the Way, which he's also in, and being like, oh, there's that guy.
Yeah.
I like looking at his face for reasons I don't understand.
Right.
And there's also different variations of Bill, because there is, this episode is, side part, no glasses.
Yeah.
There's also, my prime for me is side part with glasses.
Sure.
Give me that. Then there's also, like, slick back, no glasses.
Yeah.
Don't like no that. Good. And then, like, in season four, he gets this dry slick, this dry just back, or, like, dry, like, poofy up.
Like, kind. Almost, okay.
It's just, like, you just, like, take a hair dryer and your comb, just go back, and just, like, your hair is just standing up, and it's dry and red for some reason. Least good.
Sure.
So, yeah, that was my very important comment about the hotness of Phil Hartman.
Maura Tierney always just wears, like, black or gray.
Yeah, is she wearing, like, a black short-sleeve turtleneck?
Yes.
In this? It goes well above her neck and this short sleeve.
Yeah.
She's very sensible cardigans.
Yes. Didn't they also make her wear, was it in the first season where they talk about, did they make her wear, like, push-up bras
stuff? Yeah, I listened to them in season one commentary, and they're like, our costume designer in season one was obsessed with everyone's chests.
Yeah.
Because Dave would have to wear, like, padded shirts. Like, she was, like, trying to get everyone to wear padded shirts, which is ludicrous. I mean, because also, like, in the 90s, all their suits are too big, like, just period, just flat.
Dave looks like a step away from David Byrne. It's not making sense.
Yeah,
like, it's too big of a
suit. And that's the thing, like, a lot of Bill's suits are ginormous.
Yeah.
Jimmy James is always wearing double-breasted shirt, double-breasted jackets that are always open, which just makes them even, like, bigger looking.
Yes, exactly.
Because if they were buttoned, it would be like, oh, it's, like, streamlined, nice lines. It's open, just flapping around this extra fabric.
Yeah, wings, essentially.
And then I, Catherine, we were talking about how, like, she is very presentable. I didn't really know what she was wearing in this episode, but in general, she is wearing, like, basically a bra and a mini skirt and, like, a jacket over it in most episodes.
Yeah.
They're, like, I mean, I don't even know if straight men know more about women's fashion or whatever. I don't. I guess gay men probably wouldn't know more than straight men about women's fashion. Most of the time, she's wearing shirts that look like bras.
Yes.
Like, they're, like, lacy, and they're just, like, up. They are showing everything, and they're just, like, lacy things, and they just look like underwear.
I think I saw her on, was it NCIS?
She was a regular on CSI Miami for, like, 5 years.
That's so right. I saw, like, one episode, and she was wearing almost the same thing. Oh, yes. And I was like, oh, good, that hasn't changed.
Catherine goes to become a CSI.
Yeah.
And it's funny that it also never, I guess, it also never feels sexualized with her, because...
Yeah.
That's just, she's so confident.
Yeah.
And, like, she was always my fan casting for Storm growing up.
Sure.
Because she looks like, I mean, this is a deep cut. She looks like a Dave Cockrum drawing come to life.
Yeah.
The exact way that Dave Cockrum drew Storm. Because a lot of time in the first two seasons, she has like a widow's peak for her hairline. And she would always, like, put it back, like, put her hair back with, like, a bandana, like, a hairband or something. Which, like, that's Storm had a tiara and that same widow's peak. And I'm like, she just looks. And she also has very high cheekbones and, like, a very, like, just looks
and
a lot like
she
Storm.
Holds herself with that news anchor style, which then also works in that Storm regal style.
And then we got Halle Berry. So, we haven't talked about the high school that they go to.
Which, so you what mentioned, like, talking about things that date this, right?
Yeah.
That's important. Okay. That is... First off, whenever they go offset, that dates it so much to the 90s. And this one especially, it's like, it's right out of the Warriors.
Yeah. What was, did any school look like that? They go into a school that is just like a locker room common area. And every square inch of the entire school is covered in graffiti.
Yes.
Maybe even the ceilings and floor. Like, it is next level bananas. I have no idea what New York City public schools looked like back then.
Yeah. But I've worked in them a lot now, and obviously they're nowhere close to that.
They smoke indoors?
That's another thing, yeah. Lisa goes off to the side, and she's, like, studying vocab, and she's just smoking with, what's her name?
Lily Sobieski in one of her first roles.
Okay.
I looked this up. She retired from acting a couple years ago.
Oh, okay.
To focus on being a mother.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, seeing her in this was one of those, like, oh, wait, I know that face type things.
Lily Sobieski.
They're just sitting there smoking indoors in this, like, very 70s high school. The high school also makes it clear their background actors in News Radio are almost always terrible.
Yeah.
Like, some of the, like, kids in this are old men who just had long hair.
Yeah. Oh, that's true, yeah.
And if you watch when they're pushing away the sandwich vending machine, two of the guys... who I'm guessing have maybe never done a manual labor job, just keep, like, pushing up against the vending machine before they need to move it anywhere.
Yeah.
And they're just like, I need something to do. So rather than just stand there and exist, they keep, like, pushing a non-moving vending machine as if they're getting ready to move it.
That's one of those guys is Eugene Jarvis, the creator of... this is how he's credited in the end credits, which is Eugene Jarvis, creator of Defender, Stargate Defender, and Robotron 2084, Delivery Guy number 3.
Right.
Which is another funny thing that News Radio... the subtle, tiny things they did to fuck with the form is, like, they named it... that's how they credited him in the end credits.
Yeah.
Which they should... it should have been Eugene Jarvis.
Yeah.
But they somehow were like, no, get all this in so everyone knows. And it's a weird Easter egg.
Yeah.
They also did the same thing a couple episodes before in the season 3 premiere when Matthew becomes obsessed with Dilbert.
Yeah, and Scott Adams.
And Scott Adams is in it, and that he's credited at the end of, like, Scott Adams, creator of Dilbert, as Scott Adams.
Yeah. Have you followed the recent Scott Adams stuff?
That made me very, like, I don't want to...
Yeah.
Yikes.
It's levels of insane.
He's,
very...
he might not...
right.
He's, yeah...
very into, like, the game style stuff, which I remember when I was a kid.
Being super
I was
buff.
Yeah. I was very into, like, also, like, I was also very into Dilbert, because that was new.
Yeah.
And I remember reading some of his books, and they were all, like, borderline crazy of, like,
this is
my version of quantum physics, is literally in one of my books. This is my version of, this was pre The Secret, but it was like, this is my version of The Secret, this is how I became that. So it's not at all surprising that he went that crazy.
Anyway, there's another weird bit where it shows how dated this is. Lisa later calls for their test results.
Yes.
Like, there's not an internet.
Yeah.
All of them are working on laptops that are super tiny.
And they're that weird, like, tiny, thin, tiny, where the screen itself is like the size of like 4 Game Boy screens.
Yeah.
And it has to like flip up in this massive, like, padded thing.
Yeah, it's super... which is also weird to think about, how did they do this? How did they work in news radio before internet and stuff? But also, they make it very clear that this show is not representative of an actual job, or any of them doing anything. Does anything in this episode pertain to the actual job?
No. At no point... The anchors are always the other anchors who we never see.
Yeah.
In the background, on air, are always those. So with the SAT thing, they made it so that the SAT they take, they say, oh, there's a prep class taking an SAT in a high school, which I teach test prep and I tutor test prep. And I've both, like, written tests for the company that I work for, and because of that, I take the SAT, the real SAT, a bunch.
And
I think it's weird that they didn't just say, we're going to take the SAT. They made it a test prep course. Anybody can sign up for the SAT. I've taken the SAT as an adult male, and it is weird. Like, people respond.
You go into high schools?
I go into high schools, and it'll be me and a bunch of high schoolers. A friend of mine who also does it, when he took, one of the times he took the test, the proctor, when they, like, took his ID and everything, they looked at him and they said, we're very proud of you. Like, as being an adult, going back and, like, taking this SAT.
You finally made it.
Yeah. But when I take it, they don't really bat an eye. Because anybody can take it. Every once in a while, you'll read a blog post or a story of, like, a journalist is like, I'm going to take the SAT and see how I would do now.
Oh, God. I never took it. I took the ACT.
ACT, yeah.
ACT. Midwest. Is that a Southern thing?
It was mostly Midwest, and the SAT was the coasts. And then about 10 years ago, 10, 15 years ago, all colleges started accepting both. And so as that happened, because the ACT had the reputation of being the nicer Midwest test, people gradually took that more. So now what's happened is because people, I think 3 or 4 years ago, more people took the ACT than the SAT for the first time ever.
Good. So I can finally say that I got a 34 English and people will know what it means.
And even more so than the SAT, because of that, decided, we need to rechange our test. And the SAT is now essentially the ACT. They just mimicked the ACT. I think the scoring is a little bit different, but it's almost the same.
Because I never took the SAT, I still have no idea about SAT scores and what is good and what is bad, which means that I've missed out on a considerable number of jokes, because that is a go-to joke or a plot point or a character trait all the time.
In this one, Lisa says, I got an 800, which she needs to say what she got an 800. At the time, it was you would get an 800 either in you had 200 to 800 in reading and a 200 to 800 in math. The median score or the mean score was a 500. So 50% of people got below 500, 50% above. For the ACT, the mean score was 18.
Oh, God. Right?
And so
I got a 21 in science reasoning. That's what tanked my overall.
That's what everybody tanks on the ACT.
Was hard. But I got a 34 in English, and that made me, I got to clip out of, I think, all English in college.
That's probably the equivalent of like a 750 on the SAT.
Yes, I feel good. I also got a 6 on the AP writing test. So, I don't know.
That's very good. Yeah.
That's perfect. I think it's on a scale of 1 to 6. I feel proud about that. Also, because like news radio, I took the prompt they gave us, and I just made fun of it. It was like, should children be forced to also work as janitors in the school or something? And I was like, this prompt is stupid. So then I just made fun of it and concocted a parallel story about a janitor who lost his job because the kids now did it, and about how his Christmas was ruined and stuff. Which I guess maybe if you're looking for creative writing, that's what you're looking for, is not take whatever. That's a tangent. Maybe I should move on to some trivia.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So this episode, when it aired, was watched by 10.8 million people.
That's, for the time, nothing.
Nothing.
For now, those are insane numbers.
That's huge.
Yeah.
That's a running thing that on the show is like every one of these, because this is the 90s, like, yeah, 10.8 million viewers. It was ranked number 60 for the week.
I remember reading, I would like, my senior year, we lived in Virginia, and the Washington Post would print all the Nielsen ratings down to 60, and I would find my favorite shows, and I remember finding News Radio way, way down there.
If it ever got into the top 60.
Even. Yeah.
So the top shows of that week, the World Series was that week, so the top four shows are just World Series games, and also the number nine. Normally I just do the top five, but since the top four are World Series, I'll go even further. An ER rerun was the fifth. So an ER rerun was the most watched scripted show that week. And then followed by Touched by an Angel at six, and 60 Minutes at seven. I'm discovering that 60 Minutes was a huge hit.
Yeah.
Because it's all, from the 80s to the 90s, it's always in the top five. I have no idea.
In the same way that people don't always realize one of the most watched season finales ever, or series finales ever, is the Jag series finale.
What? Because everyone loved Jag.
I guess. And it kind of ended right as that era was ending.
Yeah.
But it was like, it was CBS's tentpole for a long time, and somehow it just stayed around long enough. I think it's in like maybe the top 10 or top 20 of series finales.
That's insane. Frasier came in at 8, and then a World Series at 9, and Home Improvement at 10. So yeah, that's the era that news radio existed in. No wonder it didn't find an audience.
Yeah.
That Touched by an Angel Home Improvement crowd ain't gonna understand what to do with this weird show. There was also a lot of reruns that week. Seinfeld was replaced by Frasier that week because it was off, and Friends was a rerun, which is why they weren't in the top.
Gotcha.
IMDb users, 80 users voted and rated this episode an 8.3 out of 10. Would you say that's good? Like what you would say, higher or lower?
I would say higher.
Yeah.
Watching this, I never felt like I was laughing due to nostalgia.
Oh, no. Yeah.
It was like, these are very funny. This is very well written. All the jokes are funny.
I would go like 9.3.
Yeah,
I would go a whole point higher than that. As I mentioned, Eugene Jarvis, the game designer who created the Real Grain Defender, plays a delivery guy. Apparently, the point of the episode, according to Lewis Morton, who was a staff writer on the show, but he didn't write this episode, the reason they wrote this episode was because they wanted to fly Eugene Jarvis out to just be in the episode. Apparently, he was also a millionaire, but his only luggage was an old brown paper bag.
Of course. All of those, like, old Atari guys are so weird. Is Jarvis from Iron Man named after him, or is that at all related?
No,
or is that just one of those many...
Jarvis is from the 60s.
Okay.
And they just...
Is it an acronym? Is it one of those, like, MODOK
style? Well, Edwin Jarvis was originally just the Avengers butler, and then when they did Iron Man, they were like, well, it'd be weird to have him have a butler, so just make that an AI. And then they retroactively, like, make... Just a really very intelligent system.
Okay.
Is the backronym they came up with it.
Ugh.
And then apparently, it's also based on because the writer Lewis Morton bought a whole bunch of arcade cabinets, including the Robotron 2084, which Jarvis, Eugene Jarvis made. And then they also put them in an office on like the building they were using. And so they had like a mini arcade, and the game in the episode is from that arcade.
I was wondering so it's so badly just taped over.
Yeah,
like they didn't repaint the case at all. They didn't make a new case, which any like theater set designer could have done, like easily. A high schooler could have done,
yeah.
in half a day. Instead, they would just apply yellow tape to yellow random and red tape. Spots.
I guess like not. Well, this is DVD quality. I guess like old tube TV quality. Maybe you couldn't tell as much, sure. Like fuzzy grain.
I've been rewatching the original Star Trek, and watching that in like high def or whatever, it becomes so very clear. Isn't when they would great? Switch to the body doubles for fights, because they often looked nothing like.
I love that. Yeah. I have the Batman 66 Blu-ray set. And that's the exact same thing where you can just tell, oh, they're in just a black room with some boxes in it.
Yep.
It's so great. I love it so much. So who would you say out of everyone in this episode had the must-see performance? Was the episode's MVP, the performance you got to see from this specific episode?
I think Dave.
Yeah, it's very hard. It's very hard to decide.
It's very tough because they all, I mean, yeah, Phil Hartman's great in this. Martini's great. Like, everybody's very good. Joe is not very good in this. Like, he's never a great actor, but I think, like, his one scene where he's, like, holding a cup and saying how he made the sandwich,
yeah.
He has no idea what to do. It felt very not his character and him, just Joe Rogan explaining lines.
Yeah, he didn't have anything to do in this episode. I will say... See, I want to say Beth or Dave.
Yeah.
I'll go with Beth because you said Dave.
Sure.
Because Beth... doesn't have a lot to do in this episode, but again, like, if you watch this episode, I want you to watch what she does, because it's so subtle and weird and so many just good choices that help flesh out a character. She just lives in that body, like, that character so thoroughly.
Yeah.
And also, I love her style.
Yeah.
would you say that must other people see this episode?
Yes, absolutely. This also is one of those... episodes that if you wanted to jump into news radio, I think this is a pretty good episode to do it.
Yeah, you're not getting the full, you might be like, well, why, who is Andy Dick, Candy Alexander, and Joe Rogan playing? Like, who are those people? But, doesn't matter. Like, everything else is so great. And you get enough of them. Like, Matthew's scene at the very beginning is very funny.
Yeah.
With him and Beth doing weird hand gestures at each other. Yeah, everyone should watch this episode. I would say this is... one of the quintessential news radio episodes that everyone should see. All of season 3 in general is pretty flawless.
Yeah, it's just hit after hit.
So yeah, thank you so much for coming out and talking about news radio. You're the first of, I'm sure, many people that are going to be talking about news radio, apparently. Because people love this show, and it's not talked about.
It isn't, and enough. I think it was... for like a certain generation of comedy writer, it like we've both talked about this, how it's hard to write a sitcom and not ape this now.
Yeah,
like anytime I write a sitcom, it becomes, I think in that same way, I just want to give each character a very clear game, and then I can just have them interact in the way that, like, as soon as Lisa and Matthew meet at the very beginning, Lisa's like being a parent to Matthew. Like, oh, let's do the jumble.
Yeah.
And because you know the characters, they just know how to pair each piece together so quickly.
It's really great. It's one of the best examples of an ensemble I've ever seen. Yeah. I mean, I think the Friends ensemble is also like fantastic. I'd say the News Radio ensemble is like right up there with it. There are no weak links. The weakest thing is the writers not knowing what to do with Catherine.
Yes.
Which is sad. And
is very true of that time and of like, oh, a lot of these writers are probably white guys from Harvard.
Yeah. Yep. Yes. But thank you so much for coming out.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
And that does it for this week's episode of Must Have Seen TV. Thanks again to my guest, Curtis Rutherford, for dropping by and talking about news radio with me. Next week, I'll still be keeping it in the must-see TV NBC family, because I'm talking about the Frasier episode, The Innkeepers. The Innkeepers is in season 2. It is episode 23 of Frasier. You can stream Frasier anywhere. If you got Netflix, if you got Amazon Prime, if you got Hulu, if you got DVDs from the late 90s, early 2000s, you have Frasier. If you want to pay for it and give Kelsey Grammer and Jane Leaves and John Mahoney and David Hyde Pierce and Perry Gilpin and the descendants of Moose the Dog your money, you can buy it in iTunes. Until then, you can follow the podcast on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr at Must Have Seen TV. If you like what you've heard, please, 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 please rate and review Must Have Seen TV in iTunes. I want to do some awesome stuff with your reviews.
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Brett White. You can read my words at decider.com. You can check out my sitcom t-shirts and stickers at tpublic.com/user/Brett White. I actually have a news radio design up, which is called The Real Deal with Bill McNeil. It features Phil Hartman's Bill McNeil wearing a red Speedo, holding his cane on the beach, and it says, "The sun, the fun, the sea, the sand, my Speedos," which is a legitimate quote from news radio. Bill McNeil is a canonical Speedo wearer. The theme song for the podcast is Patricia's Moving Picture by The Go Team. Thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast. Thanks to you for listening, and I'll see you all next week on Must Have Seen TV.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.